so became more attuned with her horse. She said she felt she could have done anything with him once she'd finished that exercise. So I've got that pinned up on my wall. I'm quite proud of that.
Welcome to the Dynamics Coaching River Tiger podcast. These podcasts are about all things equestrian, especially learning and developing skills with both horses and riders.
Right, so I'm very, very happy to introduce my next guest on the River Tiger podcast. So Jane, could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I will do. Thank you very much, Marianne. My name is Jane Randall, and my sport is dressage. I have competed internationally and also produced some horses to Grand Prix level. And I am now an equestrian coach, a dressage coach. I have a master's in sports coaching. I'm a British equestrian level 4 coach. I'm a British dressage accredited coach. And I also work with up and coming coaches as a mentor and in a coaching community.
Fabulous. So lots and lots of experience there, both in coaching, producing, and in riding, which is great. And the topic of this podcast is around a constraints-led approach, and which not surprisingly is the sort of topic around which we met. And I'd like you just to let us know when and how you became aware of what a constraints-led approach was.
Sure. Well, it was when I was doing my degree, my master's degree 3 years ago, and as you say, that's when we met, and I did call you up because I was very confused and you lit a little path for me. So that's where I first heard about it, and during the course as well, studying with other coaches, not just within equestrian sports, from other sports as well. So that was quite interesting to be able to talk to them. When and how?
Yeah, and why did you find it interesting?
Well, do you know, it gave me theory and structure, really, to wrap my coaching around. I like the fact that it's holistic and the horse and rider are at the centre of the coaching. And it's, you know, you're really sort of working towards what each individual or dyad needs. Dressage training has hundreds of years of history, and we have scales of training for training the horse. But within my own experience as a coach, I hadn't particularly come across, training for coach, for rider and horse altogether. So that was what sparked the interest. It made me challenge my coaching perspective, and made me look at myself more as a learning designer, creating an environment to help people learn. And when I say people, I'm kind of thinking horse and rider together.
Yeah.
And learn more about the learning process itself as well. It was quite a powerful space, actually, for problem solving and moving your clients, students on. So that was pretty powerful for me. And it made me realize, I'd started to look at things differently. And, you know, what is that horse paying attention to? Sort of what is the rider paying attention to? Are they actually both paying attention to the same thing? And as I got to know a little bit more about it, I realized that you could sort of dial up and down through the using the constraint, and it enabled one to make one's coaching environment more representative of the actual performance arenas, the competitions that they were going to go to. Sorry, that was quite a long answer.
No, that was great. Lots of stuff in there. And I like what I'm hearing is just that sort of starting to pay attention to different things. I think for me, that was a really powerful thing, that initially one of the biggest changes was I just got curious about different things and paid more attention to things.
Yeah. Obviously we do quite a lot of reading and lots of papers and lots of books. And one of the things that really, really stuck with me was, is it Todd Hargrove?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
I mean, his book, he talks about, he calls it signature in the sand, and that if you write your signature, whether you write it in the sand or on a blackboard or on a piece of paper, your signature actually looks the same, but yes, you've got to it using different muscles, different thoughts, and that was really hit home for me. And I've carried that through since I read it, actually.
Yeah, I have a feeling we might come back to Todd Hargrove's in a couple of questions, actually, because I know that you've found his work really interesting for yourself as well. So my third question is, how did you first go about trying to use a CLA in your own coaching? And am I right in that you initially tried it as part of an assignment for your level four?
Yes, that's right.
And during COVID, where you couldn't actually be with the people you were coaching. So I'd love to hear a little bit about how that went.
Of course. Well, and to add an extra dimension to that, we visited our daughter in New Zealand, and the planes got cancelled and cancelled again. And so I was in New Zealand trying to do this one of the most challenging projects I think I've ever had to do, but also one of the most rewarding. So I had to dive into the theory, and we had to write a piece of the relevance of CLA within our own sport. And I had to create an exercise and work with a rider from New Zealand while she was in the UK. But that was amazing because I could, and it had given me the basis, this groundwork to do this, and it worked very well. I don't know if you want to go into it, or I can send you the exercises.
Yeah, maybe if people are interested, they can get back. So I will put a link in here. But essentially, you were working on, was it half pass?
Yep. Yeah. I'd got a client who had quite a stressy horse. And when the horse got quite tense, she would get quite tense. They were trying to work on half pass. She knew what it was. She had that understanding of what it was, but she wasn't successful in getting it in her schooling so far. So I basically, and it was important that we talked about this and that she knew, you know, why we were putting this together. So I set up an exercise basically that she do half pass. You've got 5 minutes. Do half pass in as many different places and ways as you can. You're not allowed to repeat it again. Do it once, find another one. The only way you can repeat it is by doing it on the other side. So if you do everything on the right hand side first, do it on the left or mix it around. And it was one of the most empowering things, actually. She came back and we had these weird conversations very early or late in the morning or late at night. And she just came back and she was so enthusiastic about it, in that she'd just found so many different ways to perform the half pass without, she just had to notice what the horse was doing. She had to feel what he was doing. And the whole thing just worked quite well, in that the horse relaxed, she relaxed. She found different ways to do movements. And it, I suppose that comes back to the signature in the sand, really, doesn't it?
Yes.
And so became more attuned with her horse. She said she felt she could have done anything with him once she'd finished that exercise. Wow. So I've got that pinned up on my wall. I'm quite proud of that.
Wow, that's really powerful, isn't it? There's a little bit I'd love to just dive back into there, actually, yeah. Because there's an aspect of that where you were having to have a conversation with her and almost like have permission to experiment on her. Is that right? Because you're saying, okay, I'm going to have a go at doing something different as part of my project. And I think there's something there in that, really, how important it is to connect with those that we're coaching with and have those conversations about why we're doing what we're doing.
Yes.
And having those permissions to find a space that works for both of you to explore something.
Yeah, so that comes back to sort of relationships as well, doesn't it? So she and I have known each other for quite a while, and we just have this joke now, because I will just say, trust me, and she'll go, oh, And then we'll talk through what we're going to do. And I try, obviously we'll have a goal and intention somewhere that we're aiming for, but yeah, we really try to notice what's happening along the way. And I'll often ask her to, you know, she's got to tell me for it first of all, if you like, rather than me go, oh yes, that was good, you did this, that and the other, because that just colours everything that she's just felt and perceived.
Yeah, and sort of like fits really nicely with that you're sort of an environment designer or an activity designer, but you're not solving the problems okay. that are being designed, that's her and the horse. Oh, fabulous. Okay, so it would be really interesting to know sort of what the challenges and benefits have been. And I'm going to be really, really cheeky and say I know that some of the benefits were for you as well as for your training, and I think it would be nice to hear those too.
Okay, which do you want, challenge or benefit first? Let's go with the challenge really first of all, because yeah. The vocabulary first of all, just when you dive into it, is very complicated, but it's there for a reason, and the more you immerse yourself in it, the more it all becomes clearer. And coming from a very traditional sport, one of the challenges is that actually it can look very different, it can feel very different. And so I had to make it quite nuanced, not dive in and just change everything. But for with those people that I work with more continually, that was easier. But it's when you've only seen somebody once or twice, because that's equestrian sport, you know, we're all freelance coaches, and sometimes we'll only see somebody once a month or once every 6 months. So yeah, it was about dialing up and down and just working out, you know, how much that you can use or make things different, but just try to make one, you know, something that's relevant to each individual or dyad. I mean, explicit instructions still have a place.
Yeah,
but it was finding that balance really. And the benefits, it's made me far more observant and curious as a coach. I've certainly been challenged when I'm working with people, you know, how can I guide them, how can I set this up so that, you know, they learn. But going back to your comment earlier on, when we were in New Zealand, I actually discovered I needed a hip replacement, and it came on really fast. So suddenly from being charging all over the mountains and doing lots of hiking and being very active, I suddenly found myself stuck in the house and not being able to walk very far. And I found different ways to move. And I can remember swimming in the local swimming pool just because I couldn't walk on the road, but I could walk in the pool. And it really, that I can just see myself there swimming with all these books and wonderful people I was hearing from racing in my head, and using it to actually help myself and help me be able to move in a different way, but still doing the same thing. And to the other thing, it also, I think, because I was in a different environment as well, that helped. And I couldn't always get hold of the coaches and the people at university at home. I had to reach out of my comfort zone. And I got some great conversations with different coaches. I remember sitting on the side of the pool with a guy coaching canoeists, and he was constraining them. He was putting sponges or something underneath their arms so that when they tumbled, I mean, you'll know far more about this than me, when they tumbled, you know, it was, I think to help them get back up again. I don't know.
Yeah, to keep the paddle, makes them keep the paddle close to their body, because
it was wonderful to see that in a, you know, completely, I knew exactly what he was doing, but in a theoretical way as well as a just sort of practical way. And I think that's the wonderful thing about it. For me, it locked in some of the academic theory with the practicalities, which I thought was very exciting.
Yeah, great. And you actually then put me on to Todd Cargrove and playing with movement. And I did a podcast for him, PK Coaching, which was really nice. Yeah. And it was, great. And that sort of like adaptive movement, you know, getting back a much bigger toolbox of movements rather than just those that you think are technically correct. It's a really nice message from some of that.
Yeah. And I just think about going back to the dressage. One of the things that I see as a dressage coach is, and actually conversations with BD as well, I think it's something like 15,000 BD members. And I may have got this percentage wrong, but it's approximately 8%, only 8% of riders and or combinations that compete at advanced and beyond. And I wonder if this type of coaching evolves, whether that might have an effect.
That would be exciting, wouldn't it?
It's unlocking. A lot of people get to medium, you know, they've trained and they've done the same thing all the time, and suddenly they've got to do something different. With having a more open-minded, curious and adventurous coach, and therefore themselves, hopefully they'll be more advanced riders.
That would be really nice to follow, wouldn't it? I'm just thinking little things like with paddle sports, people would wait years before they learn how to roll, you know, whereas that opens the door to so many things. I think in riding, people take years learning how to do flying lead chains, unless they show jump and then it's the first thing, you know, it's like one of the but it's quite interesting, isn't it? It's like the things that we sort of like, some of these restrictions that we put on that actually would open up if we had a little bit more like you say, more adventurous and less constrained earlier on, where it might go. Brilliant. Okay, my last question for you is, do you have any recommendations for somebody who would like to know a little bit more about constraint set approach or would like to give it a go?
Well, if you've absolutely no knowledge of it at all, I think listen to as many of the podcasts that you can, talk to people who are playing with it as well. And once you're on the road, to keep coming back to it. It was interesting because I knew we were going to talk today and I went back and read my own work and went, oh, I've forgotten that. You know, it's an evolving thing. And you don't have to dive in. You can, you know, keep it nuanced, and it will have to be, I think. Particularly in the dressage world, moving forward. And not be off put by all the long words.
Yes, like you said, they are hard to begin with, but then when you get used to them, they make a lot of sense because they mean something different to the words that you used before, don't they?
And it just means that you can have great conversations with coaches, and they don't have to be questions, and you can pick up things from. I had a wonderful conversation with a swimming coach about the feel of water, and you know, he had no idea about horses, and I knew nothing. He was actually talking about surfing. That was Chris Button.
Oh, fabulous.
You know, that was really opened up the subject immediately for me.
And I think people are really open, aren't they? Most of the people I know around the world are really happy to be contacted. So, you know, don't be shy, get in touch with people. And hopefully people can get in touch with you as well, which would be really good.
Of course.
Yeah. So essentially sort of find somewhere that's safe to try, have permission, recognize that you might have to meet the people you're coaching where they're at, which is probably somewhere quite a more traditional coaching styles and things, and find somewhere where you feel safe to experiment a little bit
with somebody that you've got a relationship with, perhaps, first of all. Your first day.
I don't know about you, but I found, you think you said that anyway, that I found I just paid attention to things differently, and I started noticing stuff I'd never noticed before. And that was the biggest change initially. And then thinking about, you know, what could I do? And I think a big challenge as well is just starting to find lots of things to do differently. So with paddle sports, which is where I started, it was really easy. I just had a big toy box and I can change things like boats and paddles and things, but it's a bit more difficult with horses. I've sort of found I had to be a little bit more creative.
And I suppose some would say, on a course dressage, you can't, but it's not as easy as, say, show jumping or something like that. But it is. It's just different. And, you know, they need to learn to move in many other different ways. And those who are eventing and going to do their dressage on grass, we practice on grass. Yeah. If their test is in 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we're constrained, you know, we practice at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and not 6 o'clock in the morning. And actually, it's interesting, as I was turning the horse out today, I was thinking about our upcoming conversation, and I just thought of myself competing many years ago and diving off with two horses in the back and then competing hard and then wondering why my scores weren't so good. And I didn't compete when I was tired, or I'd been driving for a long time and then I'd have to get the horses out, and, you know, I didn't set myself up for that. So I like to take that forward, and the CLA has reminded me about that.
Brilliant. Yeah. And those wider things that are part of the performance, like, say, like driving and being tired, different times, different surfaces, things like that. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you, Marianne.
Lovely to talk to you again. And thank you for sharing some of your early experiences with a constraint-led approach. And I will, I'll make sure that people can, they've got your name, they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, lovely. I'd be more than happy to help anybody.
I know, that would be fantastic. Thank you very much, Jane.
Thank you.